is the time before, so we acquire the signal, can Nancy acquire the signal, and our contact begins. We have 9 minutes. Once we acquire the signal, that will jump over and tell a countdown how much time we have left before we lose the station. The amateur radio on International Space Station program and ham radio in general really engages a lot of the other core disciplines that you teach. You can see where science and math are integral to amateur radio and the contact. We talk about orbital elements. We talk about the Doppler effect. So there's science involved and certainly math involved. But you can use amateur radio as a hook in your classroom. The kids are interested in amateur radio. They certainly be more interested in the other things, even geography, for instance. Now the kids will know where Hawaii is. They'll see it and experience it. History, even language. I say history because a lot of the people who are important to ham radio and to science in general talk about megahertz, for instance, Heinrich Hertz. The history of these people are really exciting. These were some really interesting people in history, so even doing reports on them should be pretty exciting. Speech, and even getting your students to think before they talk. I know when I do demonstrations, I ask for the student that is the most talkative to come up and talk on the radio. And you give a radio to a kid, and he's in frozen mode. You know, he gets, hello, and that's it. So it's really interesting. Get them to think before they talk. As Matt said, you can have your school participate in AERA contact. There is an application process you go through. I think the way is probably in a two to three year time frame. We do about 60 or so schools a year, about one a week. So you can just do the math there. But you can find that application process on the website that is in your information. About 15,000 students a year are participants in the AERA program through the school contacts. And just like today, where we're retransmitting live this contact over the internet, a lot of other students and people in general can just participate in this. One of our last expeditions, the one that Bill MacArthur was on, was a very active ham radio expedition. There were 37 schools that were contacted by Bill and 1,800 general conversations with the public. Bill talked to somebody in 130 what we call entities or countries, and talked to someone in every state and on every continent. One of the things that Matt mentioned was the SUITSAT program. The SUITSAT program, where we jettisoned the suit overboard, generated about 9.5 million hits on the website in just 1 month, the first month it was up. And the students participated in that, too, by having their signatures and their voices recorded and put on the suit. So amateur radio and ARIS really involve the students. Really something you should look into if you haven't. Okay. I have a few minutes for questions. If we'd like to take some, just shout them out, and we'll go from there. And while we're doing that, why don't we have the participants come on up and get instruction from Matt on your job here. Is the ISS expecting our call? Absolutely. Something may take her away, an emergency, but if the crewmen are really active, we know when their wake time is and when their sleep time is, so hams around the world will be at their radios just in case the crewman is there. Or for a scheduled contact like this, and like you would do at your school, it is planned in advance. We're doing this on a time schedule, yes. The station is on their own time. We use UTC, this one up there, so they're 5 hours ahead of our clock, but they're on their own schedule. good question. The power output is, well, I think this one is 5 watts. I'm not really sure. I would have to get back for an exact answer on that. There's two radios we use. This one is the new Kenwood one. I haven't been involved with that one that much. The DOP is the Doppler. For those who have, like Nancy, who have radios that will finally tune the frequency, we have to take into account the Doppler effect. That is the frequency, 145.80, that they use. And you'll see that Doppler change from 145.803 to 145.799 as the station goes over the ground station. Okay, how much interest are we generating in other parts of the world? All countries are affected. All countries, I guess Bill MacArthur talks to somebody in every country. ARIS is an international activity, so we have participants from many of the countries. If you go to the ARIS website, you'll see those that are involved. And it's something I should say about interest. The school kids really get interested, and their parents are excited too. I've got a story. Once there's an amateur radio contact over a school, if you subscribe to the email list that talk about the contact, you'll see how much interest is generated. And you'll get personal stories like the following. One gentleman wrote and said that he was planning to leave work and get home and fire up his amateur radio rig and talk to the space station. He got delayed at work, so he was resigned to just listening to it as he rode home in his car, because he had an AM radio in his car, too. So he got on the car and heard Susan Helms talking to a young boy. The young boy turned out to be his son. His intermediate school son had run home and after school and fired up the rig. He was also a licensed amateur and talked to Susan Helms and made that contact himself. The gentleman said, you know, in my day, I used to run home to watch the Three Stooges. Things have changed.
We're a minute out.
Copy. Okay, Nancy's going to start calling in a few seconds, so we'll go ahead and initiate the contact.
Okay, 30 seconds out, I'm going to begin calling. You're going to hear the noise level come up. NA1SS, this is WH6PN Honolulu, calling for a scheduled contact. Do you copy? Over. NA1SS, this is WH6PN Honolulu, calling for a scheduled contact. Do you copy? Over. NA1SS, this is WH6PN Honolulu, calling for a scheduled contact. Do you copy? Over.
WH6PN 6PN, this is November Alpha 1SS. I've got you loud and clear. How's the weather in Honolulu? Thank you for being the telebridge. Over.
NA1SS, the weather is beautiful, and we're thrilled to hear your voice. Go ahead, Houston.
Hello, Sunny. This is Nick, KC5KBL. Long time since I've talked to you. The weather here in Houston is also great. We have about 300 teachers here at the teacher-to-teacher conference. Let me turn it over to the first. Let me turn it back to you first for introductory remark, and then I'll turn it to the first teacher.
Hi,
Hi, Nick. It's great to hear your voice from up here on the International Space Station. We're flying over the Pacific, as you probably have heard. It's just wonderful that you're all there, and we can participate with you, and hopefully we bring a little awareness to all the students about the station. Over.
What do you enjoy most about the International Space Station? Over.
Well, I have to say the view isn't bad at all, you know. Looking out the windows and looking at our planet or looking out the windows and looking out into space is just incredible. It's really makes you think about what you're doing here, and it's just fantastic. I think also the joint cooperation between all the countries is absolutely one of the highlights of this space station. You know, I don't know if you can hear the Russian going on in the background. Over.
My name is Rose. My question is, what is the first thing you are going to do when you return home? Over.
Hi, Rose. Well, there's so many things. You know, looking out the window, looking at our planet, you just go, gosh, I want to go here, there, and everywhere. It's so incredibly beautiful. But I think the one thing I really want to do is take a walk on the beach with my dog. People joke around about my dog because I mention it all the time, but it's one of those things where you can just go out and feel the breeze on your face and smell the dirt, smell the grass. Those are the things I really miss and I want to do. Over.
Hi, this is Angel. What impact do you think the ISS will have on the education of America's youth and students around the world? Over.
Hi, Angel. Well, I hope that they are becoming aware of the International Space Station. We've been up here flying, man, for 7 years, and my hope and my dream, and the reason I've talked to a lot of schools via the ham radio, was to bring an awareness and to just let kids think a little bit outside the box, and that, you know, they can do this if they want to, and really sort of what their purpose or their, you know, their goal on Earth is, you know, what they want to do if they want to protect their planet. And that type of stuff, I think, from the International Space Station, brings it to home when they can come on board with us. Over.
Hello, I'm Gilda. Can you describe your daily routine and activities? Over.
Sure. It's not very routine, though. Every day is a little bit different, but I'll talk about some of the just normal stuff. You know, we usually use GMT, Greenwich Mean Time, and we get up around 6, and we go to sleep at around 10. We have a little area in the FGB which we use as a bathroom, you know, to wash your face, brush your teeth. We have a bathroom down here in the service module, and we have breakfast usually together and go through our daily activities. Now, the activities can range from anything from spacewalking to doing construction in the space station, doing electrical work, plumbing work, for example, to doing science experiments, to talking to kids. There's a whole myriad of stuff. I even put together an EVA tool the other day, so my arts and crafts class came in handy. Over.
Hey, this is Anne. My question is, unlike teachers, do you keep a typical sleep schedule? Over.
Yeah, we think that's pretty important up here, and I'm sorry you don't keep a typical sleep schedule down there. It's one of the, you know, we're living up here for 6 months, and so it's like, it's normal life. You know, we need to have normal life like weekends and days and nights. Though we have 16 sunrises and sunsets a day, we try to go to sleep for a good 8 hours, and we just sort of shut the shutters on the windows and shut the lights off and close our Cayuta or sleep station doors, and it makes it pretty dark. So, yeah, we try to keep to a sleep schedule. It changes when we have vehicles visiting us, and that's just because of orbital mechanics and rendezvous, but we try to keep normal. Over.
This is Sandy. Is there a certain amount of bone deterioration in individuals that stay in space for extended periods? And if so, how do you deal with it? Over.
Absolutely there is, you know, just because we don't walk around anywhere, so we're not putting any pressure, particularly on our hips and on our feet. And so those, you know, your body is just an amazing thing. It just starts to adapt, and so it goes, hey, I don't need bone here, so it starts to peel it away so you're not wasting. And so to prevent that, we have a treadmill, we have a resistive exercise device here. These two devices hold you down with a harness onto the piece of equipment to put pressure on specifically on your hips and on your heels. And we do a heck of a lot of squats, more than I've ever done on Earth, to try to keep that bone deterioration under control. And we've done pretty good with the exercise equipment we have up here on the space station. Over.
Hi, I'm Jody. Are there any crew diet limitations on the space station? Two meals include a full spectrum of meat, vegetables, grains, etc. Over.
That's a great question. It's, you know, food is a very important thing up here. People really, you know, feel a little bit, you know, living in a closed environment that they want their certain types of food. And so we have a pretty standard menu. It has a huge selection of meats and vegetables. You know, it ranges from sweet and sour pork to lasagna to chicken fajitas to Russian Takana, which is a type of meat with vegetables, or lamb with vegetables, for example, some fish, all sorts of other vegetables. It's all sort of in a can or in a bag, and it all is a little bit mushy, but it's nutritionally balanced. And then everybody also gets a bonus container, which has some of the things that you specifically really like, and you get one of those once a month. Over.
Hi, this is Francine. How are the astronauts chosen for mission? Over.
Well, that's a mystery to all of us usually, but in all seriousness, I think people, they try to match your skills up to the mission and the what the mission is going to be all about. For example, you know, I don't know if I was perfectly matched for this, but I have a operational test piloting background. Up here I did some science. It wasn't a heavily loaded science mission, and that probably was more of my alley because I'm not a scientist per se. I think they also look at your skills while you're going through the training program and try to match you. If you're a really good robotic arm operator, well, heck, you probably will be installing a piece of the space station. Over.
1 minute to LOS.
Carol, do you ever experience air or motion sickness?
On Earth, but when I came up here, I will absolutely tell anybody who asked me, yeah, I didn't feel good for a little while because probably the first couple hours that after launch, I was flying around like a madman because it was fun, but not realizing that I was twisting around a little bit too much, and then I sort of felt sick.
Time to say group goodbye.
Okay, bye-bye. We'll see you later there, Sonny. I'll turn it over to you for final.
NA1SS, this is WA6PN, 73, and Aloha.
Okay, you can see we lost her about 1 minute before, like we predicted there.
Yep, sorry about that. She went over Diamond Head Crater.
I would like to...